I'm Austin Meath with Waco Business News, and you're listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business. My guest today is Jed Cole of Brazos River Capital. Jed discusses the company's myriad investments in downtown and his plan for turning David Crowder's old house into a new venue for Waco's overnight crowd. But first, it's the Small Business Spotlight, presented by American Bank. If you've ever seen a commercial for Foster's Australian Beer or for the Royal Bank of Scotland, you've heard a thick Aussie accent or Scottish brogue imploring you to deposit your funds, either in the bar's till or a safety deposit box. What your ear probably didn't notice is the similarity between the two tones, or the fact that they sound so similar because they were recorded in McGregor, Texas.
My name is Chris Grismer, and I am a voiceover actor, and I do silly voices into pieces of plastic.
Chris was always the funny guy growing up, and he learned to mimic his favorite characters as a young boy.
Hey there, fella! Oh boy, Donald, you know, I love Donald Duck! Oh boy, Donald Duck! Oh, Donald, sounds like you've got a cold,
One night as a high schooler in Denver, he stepped on stage at a comedy club. A chance encounter changed his life forever, though in a different way than he'd planned.
Went pretty poorly, but a lot of it was just doing voices. And they're like, hey, your material is terrible. Never do that again. But your voices are great.
An agent attending the show contacted Chris and started booking radio commercials, including for his local PBS station.
A lot of tote bags that I promised.
Traversing the voice acting mountain has been a steady upward climb.
The little local ads became, you know, regional ads, or became TV spots, which then became national spots and then recurring spots, and, you know, just kept getting bigger and bigger from there.
Two primary factors shaped this industry in 2020. One is the proliferation of content. It's not just radio and TV spots anymore. Now, it's voiceover work for COVID safety videos, audiobooks, podcasts, and more.
Like, one of the things I do is for a top 20 YouTube channel, that they will have these 20-minute videos of, like, the top 20 yachts, and I will just narrate that, and they send me, like, 6 scripts a week. And, you know, I charge generally either per time or per word, and these are, like, 20-minute scripts, so I'm like, yeah, you keep sending them to me, because that's crazy.
Austin, Texas is a hub for video game development. Chris has worked on multiple games for Oculus, the virtual reality platform. It's more economical for a game designer to hire Chris because he can voice literally every character in the game.
So, I mean, sometimes it could be, you know, background characters where you're just like, no, get out of here, go, come on, Sarge, call it, you know, we need an airstrike. But then other times, you know, I'm the narrator that leads you through, like, training modules. So it's like, before you get to real gameplay, it's like, all right, press D on the keypad and learn how to move your character up and down. I've been wizards, I've been pirates, I've been penguins that sound like Joe Pesci. I've been, you know, librarians that sound like Stewie from Family Guy. I mean, I've just every conceivable weird, you know, thing.
So, welcome to the library. Oh, God. Oh, yes. Books are deliciously evil. Oh.
A second issue impacting the industry is the pervasive nature of technology. Anyone with a few $100 can make a home studio that sounds nearly as good as Chris's.
There are so many different types of ways voice work can be used now that was not the case 20 years ago. But additionally, it's a lot easier to get into voice work than it used to be 20 years ago, because you can buy full studio-grade equipment off Amazon for, you know, $400, get yourself set up, and so it's like, all of a sudden, there's a lot more competition out there.
There will always be a cheaper option as technology continues to drive down costs. But companies would rather pay up for someone like Chris for a very simple reason.
I have a wider than normal range of different stuff that I could do. I do more dialect work than probably any voiceover actor in the state of Texas.
As with any efficient market, the cream rises to the top. A bevy of broadcast characters keeps him busy both in the U.S. and abroad, and should continue until his lungs give out. The Small Business Spotlight is presented by American Bank, with 3 locations in town, including an expanded branch at Franklin and 4th. I'm now joined in studio by Jed Cole. Jed is president of Brazos River Capital here in downtown Waco. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Austin. Thanks for having me.
Jed, what is your Waco history?
My Waco history. Well, I grew up here my entire life. I left in 2009 to go to school, and I was gone for 9 years, and I've been back for about 2.5 years since 2018. So exciting to be back. And yeah, back here, moved back with my family and been working on Brazos River Capital and a couple other things here in Waco.
So what is Brazos River Capital?
So Brazos River Capital is the investment arm for Clifton and Gordon Robinson's family office. So they have a storied history, as you know, here in Waco, philanthropically and professionally. So since 2018, we've kind of partnered together to help work on some of their investments and help steward their assets for the benefit of Waco.
So this is Clifton Robinson of the Tower there at University Parks and 35. Everybody's seen their names around a million places in Waco area. So when you're thinking about being a fiduciary for someone else's money, what kind of goes through your mind? Because you do want to, of course, be making a return for the family office. But also, as you mentioned, you guys are very civically minded. They have a philanthropic bend, and Waco is on their heart. So what are examples of deals that you guys look for?
Yeah. I'll kind of split that into two questions. I mean, I think deals that we look for, we, as you know, have a long history of doing real estate projects here in Waco, whether that's buying a performing asset that's already cash flowing and trying to make it healthier and more productive, or whether that's starting something from scratch and building from the ground up. I think the beautiful thing about what I get to do is it's not hard to be a fiduciary for someone whose values and kind of goals align so closely with your own. And so I think as long as I have a good understanding of what Clifton and Gordon want and hope for their family assets, then it's kind of just comes down to me carrying out that vision. And their vision, as you know, has been incredibly good and supportive for Waco downtown, especially in with the real estate and then some of the philanthropic giving that Clifton's been able to do both for Baylor and to the city through some of his art projects. So business and philanthropy kind of mesh together in a lot of what we do, but it's been really, really fun to learn from them and hopefully carry out their vision in Waco.
What are examples of some of Brazos River Capital's assets or work they've done in the Waco area that people might recognize?
Yeah, so, Brazos River Capital has just been around for about 2.5 years, so a lot of what we do is working with legacy assets that Clifton and Gordon have been working on for far before Brazos River Capital. So I would hate for this to come across like Brazos River Capital's taking credit for a lot of what they've had in place before we ever started.
But you're in charge of managing these and making sure they perform.
Yeah, we've kind of tried to bring it all under one roof. And so, old legacy assets that they've had when we started were things like the Waco Tribune Herald building, the Baylor Tower at 8th and Washington. Those are some big assets that I think people are familiar with downtown. And then more recently, things like the Texas Life building, like the Milo building, and then most recently, the River Square Center with Crickets and Diamondbacks in it and Spice. So it's kind of a mix of some retail, some commercial, some different mixed-use projects, and then we have some exciting new projects coming to town here in the next year or so. Our goal is to have properties around downtown and local ownership and, really take the time and care that those assets deserve to serve our community, serve our tenants, and hopefully contribute to a prosperous and growing downtown.
So when you talk about local ownership, we have the entity of the Robinson family that owns it, but you're talking even more specifically about when we're trying to find tenants for this building. You really are seeking local people because they understand the community and they can serve the community better than maybe a national tenant would.
Yeah, I think we love having local tenants. We certainly are excited when any tenant from local or beyond reaches out and wants to be part of one of our properties. But I think just in the way we are able to serve them, if something is happening at the property, we're just a phone call away and usually a couple blocks away. Also really caring about the appearance and what this property is, how it's contributing to downtown, how it's contributing to its neighbors. I think if it's owned by someone multiple states away, they don't get to really see and feel how their asset is actually impacting the community around them. Whereas we walk by our assets every day, we have friends and close relationships that are tenants in our buildings. And so the way we kind of try to go about our work and steward those assets, I hope, is reflective of our hearts and passions for downtown Waco.
President Trump passed the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act in 2017 that created something called Opportunity Zones, which when they were created, they were all talked about by everybody. I remember going to a panel that Patilla Brown and Hill did discussing the opportunities that this new tax incentive essentially would create. It doesn't seem like outside of the Texas Life building in Waco that the Robinson family acquired, I haven't seen a lot of activity of Opportunity Zones in Waco. Have you seen different, or why do you think that some people are latching onto it but others haven't?
That's a very good question, and I probably don't have a very good answer to it. We have seen some different levels of interest from outside investors in Waco. We were fortunate enough that almost our entire downtown is qualified as an Opportunity Zone, and so that makes projects that are a lot closer to the city center in Waco viable for that kind of investment versus in a lot of other towns. The Opportunity Zones are much further from kind of the CBD and certainly harder to make the numbers work on. I think when the Opportunity Zone legislation came out, it was a bit tricky to figure out exactly how it all was going to work. And kind of what the, you know, the way it was carried out, how that would actually impact the investor. And so I think people are starting to get smart on it. There were a lot of really good info sessions and stuff right when it came out so people could understand. And so I think we're slowly starting to see some of that manifest itself in interest from bigger investors that, you know, one, can come in and afford the kind of properties that are for sale in downtown. And then two, you know, you have to be able to double the improvement value of the assets. So things like a Texas Life building probably wouldn't really qualify for that type of investment unless you're going to go double the value of the building after you bought it. So there are some tricky little loopholes that you have to make sure you're aware of that to make sure your investment qualifies. But I think we'll see some of those carried out in the next year or two here in Waco.
As you mentioned earlier, you've been back in Waco for 2.5 years. You were off across the country doing grad school on either coast prior to that. Just in the 2.5 years that you've been in town, Jed, in the muck of downtown business, what are some changes that you've seen or trends that you've sensed emerging in the last 30 months or so?
Yeah, it's been a great time to come back to Waco. There's so much energy. I think so much of what we do is focused in downtown. I think my answer will probably be in that same sphere. But, you know, for that area of town specifically, it does seem like people are really interested in spending more time down here, which at least growing up in Waco didn't seem to be at the top of most people's minds. And so I don't know if that is just a conglomeration of the bars and new restaurants and new event venues and things like axe throwing. And we have scooters now, and there's a thousand different small pieces of the puzzle that are coming together at the same time that are making downtown a more attractive place for people to come spend a Friday night or Saturday. And I think that's also opening up to new business opportunities. You have, you know, different concepts that have never existed in Waco coming in and hopefully thriving. And then, you know, I think the not missing piece of the puzzle, but I think the one that will tie it all together is as we can start attracting more jobs to downtown Waco and then eventually more residents. It's kind of like a circle of life that needs all the different pieces to really happen. And, you know, we're slowly building it piece by piece, but hopefully we'll see some bigger projects coming down the pipeline that might expedite that process a little bit.
Well, the industrial corridor is booming. It was announced recently that Amazon is building a facility here. They should employ up to 1,000 workers, paying $15 an hour. Those are people who are going to conceivably at least want to be coming and spending some of that money downtown, right?
Yep. We hope so. We hope they want to come live downtown. We hope that, you know, we're giving them the ecosystem to do all of the above in a really fun way.
What do you think are the competitive benefits, the competitive advantages of a company, whatever stage they're at, coming to Waco and setting up shop here, maybe at the River Center or at another one of y'all's properties?
Yeah, I think there are a number of them, and, you know, I hate to act like there's any positives at all coming out of, kind of the tragedy for our country that has been COVID-19. But, you know, I think it is, you know, a small silver lining is that it's making people more aware of the, you know, kind of ability to come work in a place like Waco. And it doesn't always mean you have to be working on something in Waco with all the work from home and remote connectivity that's out there. Someone can work for a company in New York or California and still live in Waco, Texas, and do that really effectively and efficiently. And I think people are starting to see that and learn that. And then, you know, so they get to continue working on the same content that they've always been working on that is inspiring them. But they get to live in a town that the quality of life, you know, for some would be so much higher if you prioritize, you know, time with your family and low cost of living and not a lot of time sitting in traffic and kind of a small town community vibe where people all know each other and really kind of lift each other up. So I think for some, big city, big metro areas will always be the preference. But I think for those that have been living in a big metro area just out of necessity for their career, but I've always desired to live in a place like Waco, I think we're starting to see that become a lot easier of a reality for them to attain.
You and I are just a few years apart, but world-wise, I feel different from you because I have a kid and I'm married, mm-hmm. and you are a young, eligible 20, 30-something working in Waco. What is the young professional community like here?
It really is. It's awesome. It's growing. I think it's really healthy. It's certainly more prevalent than it ever was. You know, when I left in 2009, Waco was never on my radar of somewhere I'd live in my 20s. And then by the time I was 27, decided to move back. And so I think that speaks to at least my view on what the young professional community is like. It's close-knit enough that, you know, you feel like you're familiar with a lot of the people that are working around town at different employers. But it's also, there, you know, there's new people coming to town all the time. There's Neighborly, there's Magnolia, there's Baylor, there's, you know, WISD, there's the, you know, churches all over town and different missional opportunities. There's nonprofits. Like, there's so many different areas of the economy now that are attracting young professionals to come live and work in Waco. And so it's really exciting that you never know. Every month you meet someone new that's working somewhere that, you know, you never had met someone that worked there before. And so it's been really fun, and I've really enjoyed my last 2.5 years.
Jed Cole is a president of Brazos River Capital, which has its own philanthropic bend, but you do too, as evidenced by the Waco Hat Company that you started a few years ago. Before you even moved to Waco, you recognized, I want to do something that gives back. You started a partnership with Mission Waco that receives the proceeds of the business. What is the latest with Waco Hat, and has the business been impacted by COVID?
Yeah, so the Waco Hat Company is still around, still thriving. My mom and I still love spending time working on it when we can, and we're still selling hats online and in retailers. You know, we sell in Pinewood, we sell in Bear Mountain, World Cup Cafe. Obviously, at Mission Waco has a large selection, and then from time to time, other retailers around town like Brazos River Dry Goods and Waco Tours and Spice carry our hats seasonally. So it's still going. It's strong. It definitely, I think, wasn't, you know, impacted some by COVID. Obviously, being online, we were still able to reach a consumer throughout the entire COVID experience. But some of our retailers had to shut down or go to reduced capacities. And so that's certainly affected some of the sales there. But overall, you know, we're fortunate to have a great community that picks it up and supports us and regardless of what's going on in the economy, and really via supporting us, supporting Mission Waco. So we're happy to be a part of that still.
And that's really the important thing, is that you have a heart for missions yourself, and the work that Jimmy does over at Mission Waco and John Calloway does, that's just always spoken to you since you were younger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it was, I mean, they have been a great, great group to partner with. I think the work they do speaks volumes. You know, they are constantly looking at ways to improve the community of Waco and to serve those that need it. So yeah, we're super proud to be in any small way associated with them and in a new way spread their light a little bit further.
And a little birdie over at American Bank told me that you are a brand new homeowner. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, as of a couple weeks ago, I am a homeowner. I figured before I turn 30, I should probably move out of my parents' house. So we are, but my parents are investors with me, and just felt like we saw another need in Waco, which is for, you know, kind of almost a boutique hotel offering. And so we were able to buy the old David Crowder house and Dr. Pepper house from the Pavin family.
This is on Washington and 15th. This is across from 1424 and that cute retro Gulf gas station.
Yep, exactly. Shares a corner with those two. And so our vision is really just to turn it into, you know, we're calling it an Airbnb because that's how at least we'll start out reaching the, you know, potential customers of the house, but really want it to kind of be an offering in and of its own in that, you know, it'll sleep 12 people, it has a pool. And I've always had a huge passion and energy for hosting people in Waco and bringing people to town. And so normally, obviously, in the past, that's been people I've already known and have been my friends. But if through this process, it's, you know, just different strangers that want to come visit and enjoy our town, I'm excited about getting to play a role in making that experience as good as possible for them and kind of having a different level of product on the market. If they don't want to go stay in one of the existing hotels or they want to bring a larger group, I think we'll have a pretty fun and unique offering for them.
Balcones Cup 2021, perhaps?
Hopefully.
So did you take a look at what the current offerings were from Airbnb and just recognize there needs to be more large-scale housing for groups?
Yeah. I did some market research on Airbnb and, you know, looked at the Magnolia rentals and looked at hotel rates. And so just try to think through what the use case is for this house. What does the occupancy rate need to be and at what price does it need to be at? To make an investment that I feel comfortable doing. And, you know, I think for large groups, and you know, there are a lot of great Airbnbs. I've been fortunate enough, some of the other Airbnb owners in town have let me come learn from them and study from them. It's really been a super collaborative environment. It's not really competition. I think we help each other. The more people that have good experiences in Waco, the more people that want to come. And so I think we're all fighting the same fight. But yeah, I think for a property of that size to be able to sleep that many people and that close to downtown, you know, the proximity to Magnolia Silos is 7 or 8 blocks and to downtown Waco is, you know, 8 blocks. And so it's walkable, it's bikeable. It can be a great spot for wedding parties if they're having weddings in town to all stay together. I just felt like at the price point and at the size, it was kind of a unique niche of the market that's not super catered to right now. And I think it'll just be fun. It's a little small part of Waco history that, you know, my parents and I are honored and proud to steward at least for this time and hopefully make it a kind of a contributing part of the business environment downtown.
You mentioned a common theme that I've heard from multiple business owners in Waco, the idea of collaboration over competition and recognizing that the rising tide does lift all boats. Is that something that you found unique in Waco amongst all your travels, or a community that's really trying to support each other and doesn't feel threatened? Or is that more common than I think it is? Because in my mind, in these big cities, you go into Boston, whatever, like it's very cutthroat because you got to get paid or you got to get out. Waco seems a little bit different, but maybe that's just my bias.
I don't know. I don't know if I can speak as much to the big city since I haven't done as much startup and business work there. I can speak to Waco in that, I think it is incredibly collaborative. And I think the kind of confidence in knowing that you're probably going to know someone else in the community that knows this person if they're reaching out or if they've entered the market in a market that you're already, you know, competing in. I think people are really good at giving the benefit of the doubt in Waco and saying, most likely this is someone that I want to help, that can help me, that we can learn from. And that we can make each other better. And I feel like that's at least when I've reached out for help, how people have greeted me and taken me in. And I hope, you know, we're doing that through Brazos River Capital, through Waco Hat Company, you know, whatever roles I play in Waco, I hope we're doing that for others. But it certainly is collaborative, and I've definitely felt very welcomed in any kind of new venture I take on. There's always someone that knows more and has learned more than you know when you're starting out. And so those people have been really, really warm and kind to take me in and teach me a little bit before I get started on my own.
Warren Buffett has a quote that I love, something to the effect of, when the tide goes out is when you recognize everyone who was skinny dipping. And a lot of companies have been exposed by this tide of COVID going out, and the financial inadequacies of your model have been laid bare over the last 9 months. So there are a lot of businesses in Waco, especially, that have been struggling during COVID, but we've seen some unique concepts pop up or businesses that pivoted and are doing quite well. Have you been inspired or noticed anything particularly cool in the last 9 months in the Waco business community? Maybe it's a specific business or it's an idea or a trend that you see emerging?
Yeah, I mean, I've been inspired watching all of these, you know, especially our restaurant business owners here in Waco, the way that they've had to audible multiple different times for a couple of weeks, it was takeout only, and then it was limited capacity, and then the capacities are moving around, and then, you know, there's rules on spacing requirements, and, you know, I think the customer just probably interprets that as, you know, okay, there's not going to be as many people in the restaurant. But I think watching some of these business owners on the other side of the, you know, table, if you will, having to change how they staff people, having to change how many employees they can have on full-time status, having to, you know, work through all of that. And yet they've all remained open. They're all still here serving our community. So I think it's been, that has been really inspirational. And it's been fun to watch the local community pick them up and see people start, you know, campaigns or drives to go support this business or that business, or, you know, making a point to pick up food and take it home rather than cooking. So it's, I think it's been fun. And in Waco, it speaks to the community that I think we've known existed, which is, you know, people are here to help each other. And COVID has kind of forced us to band together and, you know, and kind of fighting this fight that no one expected a year ago. So it's been interesting. I don't think we're past it yet, but I'm glad I live in Waco during it. That's for sure.
People are definitely spending more time at home than ever. I saw an encouraging stat that was measuring EINs, employee identification numbers, that measure basically the number of new businesses that were started. So this year, we have had 3.2 million EINs filed. At this point in 2019, there had been 2.7 million EINs filed. So we're showing that just for 2020, we've had 500,000 new businesses that were started, more than this time last year. And it's in large part because people are responding to COVID and recognize that there is an opportunity amidst all this chaos. And it takes partners to help. I thought that that downtown BizBucks program that the Greater Chamber was supporting was amazing. I tried to buy some and they were already sold out.
Yeah. No, and I think the small town businesses, I mean, they've appreciated this kind of lift and having people like at the Chamber come in and help support and get creative on how do we support each other and how do we get through this. Yeah, and to your point around, you know, more EI numbers and more small businesses, I think people are getting excited about how do I control my destiny if jobs are not as stable as I thought they were, if our whole economy is not as stable as we thought it was a year ago, how do I get out there and take a little bit of control over what I'm doing, where I'm spending my time, and how I'm ultimately providing for myself and my family. And I think that's inspiring and that's exciting. That brings me energy, at least, is seeing people find what their passions are and chase after them and in a little bit more of a risky way, but hopefully a way that's fulfilling and satisfying to them.
Last question for you, Jed. What is a resource that currently is helpful for you? Do you listen to podcasts that help you grow? Is there a book that you found that's been particularly impactful? If our listeners are picking up what you're putting down and they want a dose of the Jed Cole diet, what do you suggest?
Oh, man, the Jed Cole diet. I wouldn't want anyone on that. But no, I think I'll give him one that I love is on Thursdays I get a newsletter from James Clear. It's called James Clear 321. So you can just go search on the internet for that and sign up for his newsletter. It's an email that comes in. It takes about a minute to read, but it's always packed with a ton of impactful kind of knowledge, tidbits, quotes, wisdom from authors or business leaders. And so I always look forward to Thursdays when that comes in my inbox. So if I provided nothing else today, hopefully I got James Clear a couple more followers.
Atomic Habits by James Clear. Exactly. Go find it at your local Waco library. Jed Cole is president of Brazos River Capital. Thank you so much for coming on Downtown Depot.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Thanks again to Jed, Chris Griesemer, American Bank, and you for tuning in. We will not have another episode in November due to Thanksgiving, so be sure to stay in touch with me on social media at Waco Business News. I'll be back on the air again with more local stories on December 4th. I'm Austin Meek with Waco Business News, and you've been listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business.